So I read about this partnership between the city and university in planting more trees, kind of, I guess, living up to the namesake of the sycamores. And what other ways does that partnership exist that residents wouldn't know between the university and the city, besides just planting trees?
There's a variety of things that we do that, you know, some of it gets some publicity, it makes it into the media, but there's a lot of things behind the scenes that we do that we're either helping them or they're helping us that a lot of people probably don't know. And it's along those lines, primarily with interns in and out of the campus, the trail system, working with them along the river, there's volunteerism, so there's a variety of things.
Are there instances where that becomes a hindrance too, almost a little bit too much political red tape to get things done?
Well, I don't think so. What's happened in the past for many years is they kind of did their thing, the city did their thing. But through the last few presidents and last few mayors, there's been some efforts to work together more. And I would say it's probably working as well as it has in a very long time. And that's just a testament to all the people that are involved that they want to work together. It's not about, you know, who wins or who gets the credit. It's about them advancing their cause and us too, and how those things work together.
We've talked about blight properties in the past and the funding the state was offering somewhere near $38 million to 24 communities through different rounds in that effort to clean up neighborhoods. You were active in that as well. City engineers here in Terre Haute identified about 56 sites where this could be used. What's the latest in the effort to secure that funding and then the progress in demolishing those homes?
Well, that first round of funding, which was about $650,000 that we received, that's what's in process right now. Then in a second round, we've acquired some additional funding that will kind of follow this. It is a very red tape intensive process. We have to really control the property. And so you have to do a lot more legal work up front before you can actually tear the building down. So what's good about this is we've still got our original $300,000 we spend a year. So we're working on those properties that are a little bit more difficult, or maybe we couldn't actually get ownership of. And then on the ones that fall into the criteria for this program, we shifted those properties over to that one. So we're gonna be able to do at least 60 to 70, maybe 100 when it's all said and done, additional properties than what we would have normally been able to do. I'm still hopeful too, there'll be some other money that'll become available later in another round, because there are communities that have asked for the moon. There's no way they'll be able to use all that money. So I think some of it's going to come back in the pool, and we're just kind of plodding along here. It seems like to a lot of people, they assume we'd start tearing things down the next day, but we're doing a whole lot of that legal work. And then all of a sudden we'll begin to tear a lot of these properties down. And so it'll look like, wow, all of a sudden now you've really seen this impact.
You've helped put together a coalition along with the state police in reducing meth use in Vigo County. How did that come about, and where are you in that process?
Well, for the last few years, you know, I've been keep hearing the stories from the state police and outside of Indiana about how making a pseudoephedrine, the one ingredient of meth that you get over the counter, and they have to have that one ingredient. You can change the other ingredients, but you can't change that one. And we've been asking as mayors and other elected officials, can we go back to making that a prescription med again? And the pushback has been, I'll have to go to the doctor, I'm not gonna be able to get my prescription, costs are gonna go up. All those things are just not really true at all, what we found to the other states that have done this, that have implemented this, and in Indiana, it used to be a controlled med at one time, and then it came off. We'd like to see it back, because what that means is less access to it by the people that are using it for illegal purposes. The people who need the pseudoephedrine are gonna be able to get their doctors to give them a prescription for a year or whatever, and they'll be able to continue to get those, and their costs won't go up. Maybe somebody will have to see a doctor every few years that they don't now, but then on the other hand, you won't be able to walk in the drugstore and buy the maximum amount, and then have somebody else come in and buy the maximum amount, and then another person doing it. That's how the illegals are taking care of this. They smurf is what that's called, and this would stop that. It would really put a dent in that, because you would have to have a prescription now. You can't just walk in the store and show your ID. This whole idea came about to put this coalition together because we really haven't made a lot of progress with the legislature to get this on the table, have a true discussion about it, and take a vote on it. I'm hopeful in this session that will happen. So we've got a large group of prosecutors, associations, police chiefs, mayors, county officials. We really feel like this would have a huge impact on Indiana because we're paying a lot of money in taxpayer dollars to deal with the meth problem. We've got to find some other way to put a dent in it.
And you talked about other states that might be doing this. Is this a proven method?
Yeah, Oregon is probably one of the best examples that I've seen where, and Mississippi is another one, their meth labs drop like 60-70% within 6 months because you don't have access to the pseudoephedrine like you used to.
What would be that measuring stick to be able to say, yes, this is working? How do you see the progress in this happen?
I think it would probably take a few years to really be able to measure the output, but you're going to see less people going to jail because there's either people feeding a habit or they're involved with making of the meth. So we'll have less stress on our jail system, on our court system, on our community corrections, on our addiction systems. If there's less people exposed to meth, then there's fewer people that are going to be getting in trouble for it. And once again, I've said this many times, methamphetamine is probably the most addictive drug that's ever been created. So you don't just do it one time typically, you know, once or twice and then say, that's not for me. It happens with a few people, but it's a very addictive thing that makes you want to come back for more. So maybe you get arrested, you go to prison, you're off of it for a few years, you come back around your family or your friends who are doing it, and it's very common for them to get re-engaged in that drug again. So then the cycle starts all over again. And it's a huge burden on the taxpayers, let alone what it's doing to tear the family up. And so we really need to find a way to put a dent in it.
Then we see where the Indiana Board of Pharmacy is strengthening its laws against synthetic marijuana. So you're really just kind of fighting one battle.
Yeah, you know, heroin is a big deal, the synthetic drugs. Yeah. I mean, you're always going to have somebody out there trying to do the next thing. But I think the goal here, obviously, is to help people to not reoffend or reuse if we can possibly do something on the front end. So if you reduce the access to it, and hopefully we can do some more funding on addictions programs down the road. You can't save everybody, but you can definitely have a big impact.
Indiana University Kelley School economists predict 2015 will be the strongest year for the U.S. economy since the 2009 recession. Do you notice a little uptick in the local economy headed this way?
I've seen a few things. Home sales are doing very well here. We've seen some business expansion, some small business expansion. Doesn't get a lot of headlines, but things that you can tell they're hiring again. And so the biggest issue we face are people not being properly trained for those jobs. There are open jobs. I'll bet you there's at least 300 or 400 today in this community that pay pretty good money, much better than some of the jobs that people have right now, but they're not qualified for that for some technical reason. You don't necessarily have to have a college degree, but you have to have some technical skills to work for these businesses. So we need to continue to work with the state to find ways to provide that training both for high school students, so when they come out of high school, they've got some technical skills, and then those that go to college, that they've got that component to their education too, because that is a big trend in a lot of these jobs that are opening up, that they need some technical skills. So I'm seeing enough to tell me that we're moving in the other direction, but we still got a ways to go.
This is sort of a economic question too. I came across a report about the future of football here at Indiana State University. It's an expensive sport. The more talks about that coming about, we saw it, what was it, is it UAB that is quitting their football program?
I've heard a few that are evaluating that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've officially made that decision or not, but, you know, a few years ago, that was the talk. You know, you never know what was going on behind closed doors at Indiana State, but I think they've been looking at this for a long time, that it is very expensive. And if you don't have the attendance, if you don't have a winning program, all those combinations aren't very good to sustain a program. But the last coach, when Trent Miles came to Terre Haute, took over the program, you know, they endured a very long losing streak, but got the program turned around. Last year we had some injuries and then they were only 1-11, but this year completely turned it around, made it to the second round of the playoffs, attendance was up. So I think it's back on the swing the other direction. Our program may not be as expensive as some of the larger schools, but still it is a big expense to the sports and athletic department. The key is making it viable so you at least are bringing enough money in to offset some of those costs. And we were kind of going the other direction before. Now I feel like it's swung back to the positive side. So I wouldn't anticipate too much discussion about that as long as they continue to win and put a good product on the field and people will come to see them play.
Well, and that's why I kind of asked you about it too, just of your take, being of course the mayor here in Terre Haute, that a good football program brings in people, brings in money, and it helps the economy.
It does. And really all the Indiana State University sports teams, just to pick them out as the largest, Division I, obviously, all of the sports teams are doing very, very well, which is a testament not only to the athletic director, Ron Prettyman, and Dr. Bradley, but all the coaches they've hired. And, you know, we're always a lot of times a stepping stone for those, you know, the big universities, the Big Ten or whatever. But we've got some really quality people here, some quality athletes and students, and it does provide a good reputation not only for Indiana State but for the Terre Haute community. And so we're kind of riding a really good wave right now.
There'll be many legislative items to talk about next month. One that seems to be turning some heads is the state funding for the 911 centers. Supposedly that ends in July. Is it safe to say that they'll restore that legislation?
We're all hopeful. We'd like to see more legislation about funding 911 centers. There needs to be a separate fee or something. Those dollars shouldn't be coming out of our general fund. There is, you know, the money that comes back from landlines and cell phones is not enough to pay for 911 service. But there's got to be, that's a critical function of government. And so it needs to make sure it's got the proper funding in place. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion. There's still consolidation that needs to happen across the state. So you're going to still hear about 911 for the next few years, I think.
How is that funded here between the city and county?
Well, the majority of the bill is paid by two people. It's paid by the city. We have a contract that we pay the county about $650,000 a year. And then the majority of the rest of the funding comes from the user fees, from those phones, the cell phones and landlines. And then the county kicks in a little bit to make up the difference. And so, you know, to me, it's a county function. If they want one center in every county, then the county should have the funding in place to be able to pay for that. The city shouldn't have to pay additionally for that or anybody else. And so I'm just hopeful the legislature will help the counties get that. Whatever that funding mechanism ends up being, it's not enough just using the phone lines, though.
How well would you say it is funded?
Well, here it's probably short about $500,000 or $600,000 a year, because if we weren't paying that in there, you wouldn't be able to operate it that way. And so there needs to be some additional fees that are guaranteed fees that are going to come in and not be dependent on lowering property values that affect your tax base that then affects the income. You've got to fund that. That has to be funded at 100%, no matter what. Public safety is at the top of the list.
Hard to believe this is our last show here with you in 2014. Just kind of taking a quick look back here at this past year, what were some of the low lights and highlights?
Well, low lights, I think, just still dealing with the financial situation. It's been going on for several years now, our reduction in revenue, significant reduction in revenue. And you know, this year we didn't collect $10 million that we were approved to collect because of assessed values being down and just the caps themselves. And so we've continued to fight that all year, and we're making progress, as I've reported before. We've turned the corner and we're slowly, you know, beginning that rise. It's going to take us a long time to ever get back where we were, but we've stabilized and we're beginning to move in that direction. So from a negative perspective, that's probably the biggest thing that we've seen. On the positive side, we've invested in infrastructure. We did twice as many sidewalks this year. We're going to do twice as many again next year. With paving, we've maintained that level of taking care of our existing streets and all the things that we need to do just to maintain, plus build some new things. I feel good about that. Our wastewater treatment plant continues to move ahead. And, you know, people still want to gripe to me about their sewer bill. I get that. But we are mandated to do that. And when we get done with this plant, primarily in about another year and a half, when the plant itself is done, we will have a state-of-the-art facility that's totally compliant with all the federal and state guidelines. It's where we want to be, and we're going to quit putting so much dirty water into the river. That's a very positive thing, and it allows us to grow from an economic development perspective of something we haven't been able to do, because in some cases we've had to tell potential businesses, sorry, we just can't handle your waste. You'd have to build your own treatment plant, or, you know, you're going to go somewhere else. And so you never want to say that. I think that we continue to have a lot of people looking at Terre Haute. We keep getting farther on the list. You know, we make more progress each time. We need to close a few more deals, but it's been a good year to position us for next year, I think. And so I think it's been a really great year. I'm looking forward to next year. As things continue to improve financially, that's going to take the pressure off, and we're going to continue to try to do those things that elevate Terre Haute and we stand out from other communities so that we can grow.
I'm going to let Nick ask this question through an email. He wanted you to discuss the controversy surrounding the city's proposed sludge to diesel contracts. And I did see that report in the Tribune Star as well.
Well, I mean, the controversy is coming from a small group of people that are typically my political opponents anyway. They're not coming in and asking us any questions. And what we're trying to do right now is, the first step was to get some contracts in place. The next phase of this is to have Powerdyne to make their public announcement that they're going to be coming to Terre Haute. This is a great project, and the city is going to be in an excellent position with this, where we're going to take sludge that we pay somebody to land apply on farm fields or take it to the dump, and we're going to sell it to a company that's going to convert it into diesel. And so the only thing we're out of is the money we're already paying out, which would be a growing number anyway because of the plant is producing more output. We have an opportunity here for a state-of-the-art facility to come in that's totally green. They don't waste anything, and they will convert this to energy. So one, it's great for Terre Haute that they selected us versus going somewhere else. Two, it's going to provide us an opportunity to lower our expenses and raise some new revenues. And so it's a win across the board. The controversy comes in with people questioning what they're reading in the contracts, interpreting what they believe, and not allowing this to play itself out publicly. And really, that's up to Powerdyne to do that part. We've talked about our part, but the Powerdyne part is the most critical piece, and they'll be rolling that out in the very near future.
One of the concerns he does mention was regarding the smell.
There is no smell. So I don't know why somebody would think. I would never support anything that would bring a new smell to Terre Haute. Absolutely, 100% against that. We're eliminating the final smell, which is us, the treatment plant. And so every day, there's less of a smell coming out of there. You can go down there right now and look at this sludge. It's sitting in open field, or in open tanks in an open field, and you can stand over them, and there's a little bit of an odor right there in the vicinity. But this will be dried and removed. There is no odor whatsoever associated with the dried material. So that's a concern for Nick or anybody else. There will not be any smell associated with this whatsoever, zero.
He also was wondering if you had a chance to look over Mayor Ballard's preschool plan for Indianapolis and if there was any plans or programs that Terre Haute would have to reach out to low-income, at-risk children and families?
Well, we've kind of followed that a little bit. We were hopeful. We put in to be one of the pilot programs with the state. We weren't selected. The school corporation did a good job of being part of that proposal. You know, I think it's an important thing, and we need to find a way to do it. The state just needs to come up with the money. I mean, locally, we wouldn't be able to come up with that kind of money. I know that they've struggled in Indianapolis, but I think they found a way to do this initial piece. But long term, you've got to fund it. And so I'm really hopeful, and the governor's talking a lot about education reform and the things that he wants to do now. He rolled out some new things last week. He's talking about the pre-K component. Let's see what the legislature and what the administration can come up with, because I think it would be very beneficial to a lot of our students here that need that extra education component.